Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
The year 1973 was a terrible year for a baby in his or her mother's womb. The U.S. Supreme Court decided that a baby's life was worthless, and in one fell swoop, took away the rights of states to ban abortion. On January 22, 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its ruling in Roe v. Wade, finding that a quote-unquote right to privacy it had discovered was broad enough to encompass a right to abortion and adopting a trimester scheme of pregnancy. The 1982 Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act challenged abortion by establishing the four provisions of spousal notification, information disclosure, a 24-hour waiting period, and parental consent for minors. It was, of course, challenged, and Planned Parenthood versus Casey took center stage. But a little after 10:15 a.m. on Friday, June 24th, 2022, everything changed. My guest today is Philip Dreghi. He's president of the Judicial Action Group. Thanks, Philip, for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Diane. Thanks for having me.
So history was made on the 24th of June, 2022. And everyone knows the decision by the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, but little is known about the fact that it also overturned the Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision. Just what was that case itself, the Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision?
Sure. Well, of course, Roe was decided in 73. Planned Parenthood versus Casey was decided in 92. So it was the first big opportunity for the court to reverse Roe. It looked like they would initially. Matter of fact, all the speculation was that with Anthony Kennedy joining the court, that he would be the fifth vote to overrule Roe versus Wade. And he actually was initially. When they took their initial vote, he voted to reverse Roe. And the court got to work on their opinion, but then somewhere along the line, he changed his vote over to the opposite side and then actually wrote the opinion in Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Oh, wow.
So that opinion was interesting because they changed the trimester framework that Roe versus Wade had adopted, which was basically legislation. And they went instead with an undue burden standard. In other words, that states could not pass laws that posed an undue burden to the so-called right to abortion, which of course was a fiction. None of that was in the Constitution. So they just created new legislation that was even more difficult to understand because there wasn't any guidance. Like, what's the difference between a burden that's undue and one that's due?
Right.
It just left it in the hands of judges to make it up, which is what the court wanted all along, to have the power to decide what they wanted. So that's what Planned Parenthood versus Casey was. And it was a constitutional disaster as well as a moral disaster and a separation of powers disaster. So what the court did Friday was basically to straighten all that out, to say, look, we were wrong. We had no authority to legislate in this area. There's no federal right to abortion. Even liberal law professors admit that, the honest ones anyway. And so they
fixed it. You mean there's some honest ones out there?
There are, insofar as what they say is, look, and there are those who say, look, I'm pro-abortion, I'm a liberal law professor, but the idea that there's a constitutional right to abortion is just a joke. It's not in there.
Exactly.
And substantive due process is an oxymoron. And so, there are those honest ones who say, I like it, I like abortion, I want it, but it's not in the Constitution. So that's when they're being honest.
Well, that's good that they're honest enough to admit they're pro-abortion, but it's not in the Constitution, so there's no constitutional right. Actually, my understanding is that Justice Alito, who wrote the majority opinion on the 24th, he went down through the history of Roe, explaining why this was not a well thought out or a constitutional opinion in 1973. So,
exactly.
That was interesting.
Yeah, he absolutely destroyed every argument that could be made in favor of Roe, or I guess a better way to put it, all of the illegitimate defenses of Roe. He addressed them all.
That's
it was an amazing opinion.
Yeah, and that's very good because, I mean, people needed to understand that because
sure.
Even the pro-abortionists don't, not that they care, most of them, except the few law professors you were talking about. But they don't understand or don't know about the history, and I don't believe a lot of pro-lifers understand or know about the history of Roe. They know it was a bad decision, but they don't know, many of them don't know the constitutional reasons why it was a bad decision.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we immediately have protesters out there. Truthfully, I was surprised with a 6-3 decision on the 24th. I was surprised that after the leak of the draft opinion, I was afraid that, you know, the picketing out front of the justices, the conservative justices' homes and such as that would have swayed some of their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very thankful that they had enough courage to stand by their decision to overturn Roe. That was encouraging.
And the way I've described it, Diane, is I believe that, you know, the left did their best to bring their fire. And when some of their fire wasn't working, they would increase the fire and try to bring more. And it got to the point where literally justices were no longer being threatened. An assassin came to Kavanaugh's house, you know, and then there were threats made not so impliedly by some of these radical groups against the justices' children. But there came a point, our prayer all along was, Lord, use what the enemy means for evil for good. In other words, take this fire that they're bringing and make it backfire and use it as a refining fire to bring the justices to a new place in you.
Wow.
And that's exactly what I saw happen, Diane.
Yeah.
I mean, there comes a point where when you get bullied and you don't give into it, you become stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think happened, but I know it's what happened with the justices, because they not only did the right thing in Roe, they did the right thing in case after case after case.
Oh yeah.
In a bold way that I think they just said, look, we're in a bad spot in this nation. We don't have time to mess around.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do our job. And if people want to try to pack the court or they want to threaten us, they're just going to have to deal with it, because we're not giving into this bullying anymore. And they set a great example for the rest of us. I mean, if our justices can do that, every one of us can stand up against these threats of death or whatever they want to bring. We just need to say, we're standing with God, we're standing for America, and we're not giving in to this bullying, murderous mob anymore.
Yeah, that was very encouraging, all the good decisions that have been handed down. Too bad they don't look at the November 3rd, 2020 election again, though. But, I mean, yeah.
Well,
that's all different story.
And who knows? They may have some other opportunities to look at election cases and deal with the problems, because that's a whole nother topic, right? If we don't have honest elections, you know, that feeds everything that we're talking about. Even the Supreme Court eventually comes down to who's elected to the White House and the Senate.
Right.
So
we
need to win those elections and have honest elections.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Anthony Kennedy as beating the deciding vote in Roe back, or rather in the Casey case back in the 1980s. And he was
92.
Okay. He was nominated by Ronald Reagan and confirmed, and he turned out to be a big disappointment. So, you know, can't always trust. And I'm assuming, you know, President Reagan was going by his advisors. Of course, they had basically pushed Robert Bork out of the picture. The Democrats had, and then Anthony Kennedy was the one that Ronald Reagan nominated instead. And he's been a bad story. A very sad story, really, when you look at the abortion issue as well as the homosexual issue. But that's a whole other program, too, as far as the saga of Anthony Kennedy. Now, didn't they use the, looking back at Roe, didn't they use the 14th Amendment to say that the right to abortion exists in the Constitution? Did they use that?
They used several different amendments over time to try to say there was a right to abortion. The reason they did that, of course, Diane, is because the word abortion is not in the Constitution.
Exactly.
And then they say, oh, well, it's within the word privacy. And they say, oh, well, that's not in there either.
Exactly, yeah.
So now what are we going with? And they say, oh, well, it's within the word liberty. And we go, okay, well, liberty's in the Constitution. But that's talking about when they say that you have to give someone due process, or you can't take away someone's life, liberty, or property without due process of law. What that's talking about is if you're going to take away someone's life, which is like the death penalty, mm-hmm. you have to have a trial.
Or abortion.
You're going to take away someone's liberty and send them to prison, take away their liberty and put them in prison. There has to be a process, a due process. Mm-hmm. And then the other property, that means if you're going to find somebody in court or take property away from them, you have to have a due process to do that. Well, that the liberty interest doesn't encompass like, well, I want something, therefore it's my liberty. If that's the case, everything's liberty, right?
Right.
Any sin in the world, any crime that you want to commit can be your liberty. So
do whatever you want, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they kept searching. And even this time, it was interesting. For the first time ever, parties to the case were saying, oh, no, it's in the Equal Protection Clause because women need to be protected equally with their right to abortion. And so they just kept trying to make stuff up to find a place.
Because men, didn't mean to interrupt, but men have a right to abortion, so women had to have a right to abortion, something like that.
It makes no sense. I'm exactly. not even trying to go there, because now they're talking about birthing persons.
Oh, yeah.
they pretend to not know the difference between a male and a female, which is a whole other mental illness.
And the one who's replacing Stephen Breyer doesn't know what a woman is.
I think she does. I think she just didn't want to say it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, she's married and has, what, 2 children? She doesn't know what a woman is.
Yeah, exactly.
Most interesting. Yeah. It's an interesting world we live in. It's a scary world we live in, as we see things that we've always taken for granted and we know are true, like male, female, and abortion's wrong, et cetera, et cetera. It's all being twisted and redefined, because this nation has fallen so far away from God, and we're bringing up generations, really generations, that don't know the truth about the history of this nation, nor the truth about God. So,
I'll say this: I am optimistic about a change that's occurring right now, and I do think there's spiritual significance. I know there's spiritual significance from the United States of America to God, the court saying we repent and we're reversing this this genocidal edict, and so I see God responding to that, not because we deserve it, but because he's gracious. I see him being gracious, and I believe he's bringing us into revival and a third great awakening. And with that, we'll see so much of what we've needed in this nation with the healing and the, coming back to our senses from this just wickedness of being absent from God. It's what happens under Romans 1. And so, but I think God is moving in his grace. And so I am optimistic that we're going to see turnaround.
Well, that's true. We definitely need another great awakening. And we serve a gracious God who, when we repent, he forgives us of our sins, even though it involves the deaths of 63 million babies, which is how many were killed from 73 to June 24th, 2022. So that is mind-boggling. But according to the abortion advocates, abortion has been banned in the country, but that's not true, right? That's not true.
Well, it's not. No, it's not. Of course, now there's a policy in all 50 states for the people that live in the state. It's just like there is with, lots of different laws, murder laws, health decisions. Mm-hmm. All these laws are made by state governments. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it was with abortion for years until the Supreme Court lied and said there was a federal right to abortion. Now that the court has corrected that, it simply goes back to the states again. And so the Supreme Court had made very clear they were not outlawing abortion. They were simply saying, we're not going to claim there's a federal right when there isn't one. And now it's a matter that the states can decide. If anything, you would think people would be excited because they get to now have a say in the matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All these pro-abortion people were winning by default because you had 5 unelected judges voting on it. But now, if they really like abortion, it's a democratic issue more than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
You hear these lame ideas that this is somehow threatening democracy, and I'm thinking it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
It's empowering democracy because now you have 50 states, legislatures, making these rules, and the people can participate more than ever if they want to.
Correctly, because the Supreme Court, justices on the Supreme Court are not elected and thus not answerable to the people. But the legislatures in all 50 states are answerable to the people because it was the people who put them in those positions. So
exactly.
So the battles move from Washington, D.C., although the Democrats don't realize that yet, move from Washington, D.C. to the state capitals in all 50 states. And as you're saying, exactly. That is encouraging, and it's definitely a step in the right direction to empower the states
sure. That
want to protect life to do so.
Yeah.
We can always expect, you know, New York and California and probably Oregon and Washington State as remain, you know, they will remain pro-abortion, at least at this time, they will remain pro-abortion because of the elected officials who are in their state capitals making laws. So now I know that there's threats from the Biden administration that they want to codify Roe. And I'm going to throw this out there. Already, actually last January 2021, there was a bill introduced in Harrisburg by a Chester County Democrat that would codify Roe in Pennsylvania. I don't see it going anywhere because we have a GOP-controlled legislative body. So, you know, it just shows how important elections are. And
yes.
with this decision on the 24th of June, it was, Elijah, you're saying, goes back to the states, and we just need to be very careful who we put into office to make those laws.
That's exactly right.
So we need to be diligent, continue being diligent through this because the battle is not over yet. And how do you envision it all playing out? Mm-hmm. I mean, I mentioned California, New York, Oregon, and Washington State probably being pro-abortion and continue to be pro-abortion for years to come. How do you think it's all going to play out? Just a general idea.
Well, certainly states will be making policy, and liberal states will have very liberal policy. Conservative states will have very pro-life policy. Some of the things are going to shift out in terms of whether federal governmental officials in the administration try to push policy down to the, for example, to military bases in conservative states. So you take a state like Alabama, that's going to be one of the most pro-life in the nation, but we do have military bases. So
Does
Biden start setting up within the Department of Defense abortion facilities? Does he try to rent space or sublease to Planned Parenthood? I mean, and then how do states respond to that? What rights do they have? How do they approach it? So you have other things with what will be the shipping of abortifacient drugs to people at their homes, and that's dangerous. And so there are going to be it's going to be a lot more complex, and a lot of new paradigms that we have to think through that we never thought through for 49 years.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have to. And so we've got to be prepared to work very hard. The left is going to be, they're going to be aggressive. And I think we have to be as aggressive, if not more aggressive, in response defending life, because we haven't been able to fight these battles before, Diane, but now we can. And
right.
So we have to be up for it, and we can't allow them to threaten us. Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 4, this has been a theme verse for me, and I think it's something that the justices even went through. Why do you fear the one who can kill the body and after that can't do anything to you? Fear the one who, after he's killed your body, can put your soul into hell for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I tell you, fear him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, president, said we have nothing to fear but fear itself, and he was dead wrong. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and we have to fear God, and when we fear him, we don't fear anything else. But when we take this arrogant statement of, you know, I'm not afraid of anything, then we end up fearing everything, because God made us to fear him. And when we fear him, then we have a proper perspective, and we can't be bullied by Satan. And that's where we have to be right now in this battle. Fearless before everything except God, and fearing him properly.
Absolutely. Good points. And unfortunately, conservatives have a tendency of not being ready or willing to be in battle, aggressively in battle. And it's something we have to do, because we already see what the liberals plan on doing. And they're, you know, they're gearing up for the battle. And we must do that also to protect the babies. And as you're saying, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And that's what we have to grab hold of that. For sure.
Yeah.
So we can all celebrate and be very thankful that Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey are gone, and that is back in the states. But now the battle is here in all 50 states, and the pro-life folks need to be prepared for that.
Exactly.
So how can folks contact you guys?
Sure. Well, we're at judicialactiongroup.com. That's our website. And we're doing a podcast now, so people can also go to YouTube Judicial Action Group and find our podcast there. We do one weekly. We didn't do one today because I've been under the weather. But yeah, we'd love for people to tune in and watch those and then support us if they can. We love monthly supporters. We love every supporter, but in particular the monthly ones because it helps us budget.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Philip, and you take care of yourself and hope you get to feeling better here soon.
Thanks, Diane. God bless you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.